Good afternoon. It is a gorgeous fall weekend here in Chicago, and we're going to just sit inside for an hour, no matter what you're doing out and about. Hope you're joining us here on 670 The Score for Bears All Access, brought to you by IGS Energy. I'm Chris Bowden, filling in for Zach Zaidman on this Saturday. And we are pleased, as always, to be joined by 85 Bear Tom Thayer. And since he's this is not a weeknight and he's not busy doing other things, joining us as well on this edition of Bears All Access is Jim Miller. Guys, good afternoon. How you doing?
Chris Bowden, how you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Jim should give me a little congratulations for last week, Notre Dame beating Michigan State.
This was going to be the first thing I brought up. We have tons of stuff to cover because actually there are two games to talk about. Since we didn't have a Bears All Access between the Pittsburgh game and Thursday's game in Green Bay. So lots of ground to cover, but that was going to be my, since we got you guys together, Notre Dame 38, Michigan State 18, a mere 1 week ago.
You know, throughout my 4 years at Notre Dame, Notre Dame Michigan State was one of the most physical games I played year in and year out. And Notre Dame Michigan State at Michigan State was the most physical game I played. For some reason, Michigan State had it cranked up. They had a supportive crowd. You know, they had crappy locker rooms for the visitors, and there was a lot that went into it. And
they weren't pink, though, were they?
They weren't. Okay. They weren't. But
Congratulations. I was actually at the game on the field, and it was horrific to see your team running up and down the field on my Michigan State Spartans. Well done.
No answer for Wimbush. No answer for Wimbush, right?
Their ground game's fantastic. But, you know, much like the Bears, to equate the game, you can't win games with turnovers. It's really that simple, and Michigan State turned it over three times in the first half alone, and the rest is history. So to the victors goes the spoils.
All right, Tom? What a good sport there. So we've at least addressed that. And each team is on to other things. And there has been a lot that has happened, as we said, over the course of the last time Bears All Access was on the air prior to the Pittsburgh Steelers game. Our phone number is 312-644-6767. I know a lot of frustration has been let out over the course of the past, you know, however many hours, 36, 40, whatever it may be. But let's just keep it to this today. Folks, call in if you have a specific question for Tom or for Jim on the state of the Bears or things moving forward, if they have opinion on certain things. Because I'm sure there's been enough emotions that people have been letting out. And there are also good emotions as well from what happened in the days before that game Thursday night. 23-17 overtime win over Pittsburgh, and then followed by the 35-14 loss at Green Bay. And it shows how this team is capable of following a blueprint to win versus a quality opponent. But it also, 4 days later shows how this team can be incapable of following that blueprint too, Tom.
Right. You know, I think when you do an evaluation at this time of the season, like John said from the podium yesterday, it's a self-scout of four games. And that's what you have to look at, the pros and cons of the Bears. And then just something like from Thursday night, you look at the statistics and it's kind of deceiving, because if you just looked at the statistics without looking at the score, you think, wow, this is a much more even game. But then it proves to you that the statistics can be near the same. But if you give away possessions, if you have turnovers, if you have penalties at critical times that lead to scores for your opponent, every one of those things can factor in the game. And then when you do self-scouting, it's about every position coach evaluating each position honestly. Are the guys progressing the way that you need to? Are players playing better than they did week one into week four? Can you expand what you can do offensively because everybody's capable of absorbing more from the playbook? All those types of things, you have to be evaluated, and you got to be honest, you know, because you're getting paid a lot of money to play professional football, and you're held to a higher standard of accomplishment both by the fans and by the coaches and by your assistant coaches, and that's what you got to come out here and be honest with when they do have a couple of extra days of self-scouting.
Yeah, it really is. I think Tom summed it up nicely. I mean, honestly, they're a drop pass away from being, you know, basically 2-2. I mean, it took Atlanta to the brink, you know, is my opinion on it. And, you know, and I know the quarterback position is the most visual, and you can see when mistakes are made, obviously, but there is more to it than as Tom is pointing out. Crucial penalties at crucial times, you know, twice to me the other day in the game, Bears should come away with points with two drives, but you get a holding call, you fumble a snap, you know, those type of things, that's going to cost your team. And they're at critical times is what the point is, you know. So, and they've got to clean up all those mistakes. They're paid professionals to do it. They know it. John Fox knows it. And I think that's why he summed it up, that everybody is accountable, because it's not just one position.
And I'll ask you guys later during the course of the show. We're here until 2 o'clock to give your self-scouting assessment of where the Bears are through the quarter poll of the season as well. We'll do that. And yes, we are going to address the elephant in the room, everything that everyone is talking about here in town. But you know, to pull back the curtain a little bit, you know, both home games were 23-17 one way or another. They played much better. In the two road games, you lose by 22 points and you lose by 21 points. And it's that the common thread is the early confusion, the early poor execution, and the early leading to turnovers, that when you're on the road, that's a lot higher mountain to climb to get over, especially when there's such a small margin for error for a team like this.
Right. You know, to me, it's frustrating. You know, let's speak about the offense, because you go to the very first play of the game, you talk about a sack, strip, and a fumble, and then a couple of plays later, Green Bay goes in the score. I think for me, I was saying, man, I just want to run the ball. I want my offensive lineman to get sweated up. I want him to go to this line of scrimmage on the first play of the game and have 100% confidence, and no matter what defense Green Bay shows, that you're going to come off the line of scrimmage with power and you're going to start getting things rolling that way. But the play that Dal Loggins called, it was there. I mean, they put Zach Miller in motion. He stood up next to the left tackle. He chipped on Ahmad Brooks, and then he went out for an easy pass. Man, it was there. It was first and 10 or second and one, whatever, depending upon how the Green Bay defense reacted to it. So you can't sit here and question the play called, because it was a well-called play that should have been run perfectly. But then when you – I don't know. Do you lack confidence? Do you not have, you know, an understanding of exactly how all 11 players fit in against the defense you're looking? So, you know, you got to start with the first play. But, again, you also have to go back to the other three games and look at every single play, not only the first play of the Green Bay game.
And Jim, it's almost a matter of what we've seen so far through the first two road games. Things have been much better at home, although the Bears did overcome a lot that they put on themselves in that Pittsburgh game and managed to get through. But when you're running into the wall and making all those mistakes early on the road, you're asking for trouble, aren't you?
Well, here's the most storied rivalry in all sports, right? That's what it always is leading up to Green Bay. And I think any player needs to know you need to match the intensity or more when you go on the road, especially in a quote-unquote rivalry game. You know, they put Clay Matthews over Deion Sims. Well, Deion Sims, this is his first year as a Bear. Mike Glennon, it's his first year as a Bear. Some of the offensive linemen, the receivers, it's their first year as a Bear. You know, you got to be able to match that intensity from play one. I would have liked a run play to be called too, because get these guys settled in on what type of game, because it is a different game than other games. That's just my take on it. I always felt differently the week of Green Bay. Not that I was giving it more importance, but I wanted to make sure that I personally wanted to match the intensity of the opponent, because that game, whether we like it or not, carries more weight, even though in the score column it only equates as a win or a loss, but it's more. It's more of an emotional game. It's more physical. You saw it even on Thursday in the loss to Green Bay. The Bears beat up that football team. They beat them up. You know, that's just my take on it. But you've got to be able to match the intensity, and certain guys need to learn about what that game and what it entails.
And as far as that first play is concerned, you know, the Bears know, I think they know what their identity is and what it should be, and that is running the ball, bleeding clock, you know, rely on your defense. And I guess from Dowell's standpoint, he's thinking, okay, well, the thing we have to try to do at some point is stretch the field. And, you know, trying to do that right off the bat, there could be an argument one way or another to do that. And that wasn't really even a stretch the field play.
Right. But again, you have to go, and when you do your evaluation of the opponent, what do they do well and what do they do not so well? And who do they have in there that can win battles? And then who don't they have in there? And I'm talking about Mike Daniels. When Mike Daniels was not in there in the interior of the running game, and I got to say, for the two games that Kyle Long has returned, he's a powerful guy. And so if I'm going to have a power impact person that's going to allow me to run a big play behind him, I'm going to go with Kyle. And so, you know, that's where I would see things differently as an ex-offensive lineman than maybe a guy like Jim would see it, you know, being a quarterback and how he sees Green Bay as being attackable.
Jim, if you have a thought on that, hang on to it. We're going to take our first break here on Bears All Access and get back to you and pick things up there. And thoughts on the topic that is first and foremost as well on Bears fans' minds all over the city and all over the country, whatever it may be. I think we know what we're talking about. If you're listening to Bears All Access, Chris Bowden filling in for Zach Zabeman. We have Jim Miller joining us today alongside Tom Thayer, who is there every week for the Bears All Access shows, as we reflect on both a win last Sunday against Pittsburgh and then the loss Thursday against Green Bay. Jimmy, before we pick things up here, was there any point you wanted to add about the identity and that opening play call Thursday in Green Bay?
Yeah, because much like Tom, I'd like to go in there and pound it and just settle everybody down because emotions are high. And that's what Green Bay did. Green Bay, their first drive, they focused on the run game. They were down to their sixth and seventh tackle. Let's just settle these guys down. Let's run our basic plays. A lot of them were just bob plays, which is a back on a backer. They went 21 personnel, two backs, a tight end, and two receivers. That's about the most basic formation you can use in football. And that's, to me, that's all Mike McCarthy was doing. For the Bears to go in there and call that shot play, and it was designed to be vertical. All it was it ended up being a two tight end set. It's a solo right H-half motion. That's why you saw Miller come in motion. X is tight and Z is tight, and it's a press man single high look by Green Bay. So they did load up the box to stop the run, and it's a good play action. But what happened is on the Z over, which was run by Kendall Wright, and Bellamy, who's the X, Bellamy gets pushed inside on his release and then goes up, and nobody is threatening the safety wide. And Bellamy tries to adjust and then get wide, and what that's supposed to do is open up the Z over, which is going to go 10 yards up, and he's just going to run away from man coverage all the way across the field. The free safety in the middle of the field did not move. So when Mike Glennon makes his fake and he comes up, and you see him the first time, he's pumping. He's waiting to see what that safety is going to do. Is he biting on the over, or is he going to go help out on Bellamy on the X bench route? And so the safety didn't commit. Mike holds on to it too long, and that's what I mean having the sense of urgency and understanding that game. Because if I'm Mike Glennon and that play is called for me, if I have any doubts at all, just go right to the check down, mm-hmm. which was Miller in the flat that Tom talked about. If I've got any pressure on me, i.e. Clay Matthews one-on-one on Deion Sims, if I don't like it at all, I'm right to the check down. Or you say, I'm going to anticipate and just lay it out there for Kendall Wright throwing to a spot opposite where I know there is no defender over there because the safety's in the middle of the field. The safety played both of them, which caused Glennon to hesitate, and he should have reacted quicker to dump it off to Miller. If there was any problems he felt at all on the play or any indecision on the play at all. And that's the sense of urgency you have to play with. It really is that quick. And you've got to take in all the factors from pressure to reading the free safety to, all right, hey, I'm just going to my check down, pop my feet, boom, get rid of it. And that's what they're paid to do. It's what they're paid to do.
Jimmy, you're brilliant. My head hurts right now. I wish we had the touchscreen for radio.
But, you know, the thing about it is we Jim has, for the luxury of the audience, he has the opportunity to explain everything mm-hmm. that you have to think about within an instant. And that's the thing about football. You can't go to the line of scrimmage thinking. You have to go to the line of scrimmage knowing. And, you know, that's the difficulty of the sport. But, again, like Jim says, that's why professional athletes are called professional athletes.
And that leads us perfectly now into the conversation that everybody seems to be having at the quarterback position. Now, the selling points for Mike coming in when he came aboard, ball security, especially the way this team has been plagued with it in recent years. But he's now averaging two turnovers a game through 4 weeks. That includes five interceptions. The four that he had on Thursday night turned into 21 points, if not directly, eventually on the ensuing possession for Green Bay. Now, Ryan Pace, John Fox, they didn't want or expect to be facing a decision like this so soon. So I don't think there's any question. It's at least being talked about up at Hallis Hall if a decision hasn't already been made. Fox was being foxy and coy yesterday with the media, saying he doesn't really care to clarify anything at this point. What do each of you guys think from a gut standpoint, will a change happen and should a change happen ahead of the Minnesota game?
I think I want me to go first.
Yeah, go ahead, Jim.
I think they're discussing it because all those factors factor in. See, because I just look at things differently. You know, I look at even after the fumble, the Bears are driving down. They're at the 25-yard line, and they botch the snap. Yes, it's a turnover, and it matters in the ultimate decision that the Bears have, but that should have been 3 points. Minimum, the Bears were at the 25-yard line, and that should have been 3 points. Then they go down the last drive of the half. It's like nothing. Bears go right down, corner out to right, touchdown, come out the second half. They drive it again down to the Green Bay 27 and have a holding call. Then they come back after the holding call, which backs them up significantly. Ball would have been at the 25. Then they drop a screen pass. Then there's an offsides penalty or false start on the Chicago Bears. Now the ball is back at the 50. That has nothing to do with the quarterback. Nothing. And they were driving down again to get points. So the quarterback-center exchange, there's no excuse for. Quarterback and the center got to work it out. I know they were using Josh Sitton to clean that up. So whatever they got to do to clean that up, that to me is more a self-inflicted wound than the Bears. But the decisions on the in-cuts where it's got to be checked down to the back or the lack of awareness to check it to Miller, that has to be factored in. And I think minimum, if they go with Glennon at the starter, as a starter, they have to have a package ready for Mitchell at some point, I think. Just to say, if Mike's not playing well, hey, come over here, take a breather. Let's give a package of plays to Mitchell Trubisky, and you can continue the growth of Trubisky and then see where it goes. Because there's a lot of other things that can go wrong if Mitchell plays. It could be worse than holding calls, worse than false starts, worse than turning over the football. You know, if Mitchell has the propensity to do that as well. So that they all factor in.
Yeah, and just the way you described that opening play a moment ago, the kid has to be ready to process all that. So you're saying if they're not going to go ahead with the rookie, at least have a package of plays. You're not necessarily saying they're going to rotate him in.
Well, if they trust that Mitchell, if they trust that Mitchell can manage a whole game, then they'll decide to go with Mitchell. But if they can't, which is, you know, to me, the telling moment was the third Tennessee preseason game. He was struggling at the line of scrimmage, delay of games, you know, all those type of things. He has to be able to manage everything that I just brought up. And, you know, if they feel he can do it, then and they feel it's time and it's his time and he's ready, then that's fine. That's their decision. And but if they don't, then the other way is to create a package of plays, i.e. like Jeff Fisher did with Steve McNair. Remember, Chris Chandler was a starter. They would create a package of plays to introduce Steve McNair, who came from what? Elkhorn State. Mm-hmm. He had no clue about NFL offenses or how they're structured or the defenses. And so that was their way to introduce Steve McNair to the NFL game. He would do a series in the first half. He'd do a series in the second half. At times, Fisher would put him in to jumpstart the offense, things like that. But they had a design package of plays because at that point, Steve McNair was not ready for everything. So that's how they did it, and we all know what Steve McNair's career ended up being. What a great player.
You know, I think the evaluation has to involve the entire team. Quickly, I need to see more pressure on the opponent's quarterback. I need to see more out of Leonard Floyd. I need to see more out of Eddie Goldman. I need to see those guys be more destructive against the opponent's defense and create interceptions and create turnovers somehow. I need an evaluation of the wide receiver position. Who out there is the best of my options when we're talking about that position? And then when I look at Mitchell, the quarterback, to me, I need him to be so impressive in the meeting room to me and the way he answers questions and how quickly he answers them, and I need them all to be correct. If you think of back at the Cleveland game, I think that left a bad taste in our mouth the way the offense reacted to the Cleveland defense, and Minnesota is going to play more similar style to the Cleveland defense and the defenses they faced up until this point in the season, which makes me a little nervous too. So If they do want to give Mitchell Trubisky an opportunity, it's about how impressed they are in the meeting rooms. And you heard Jim describe that first play of the game and all that information that's going through his head. And, hey, we've had the luxury of watch the game live, and then you go back and you look at the tape and you look at all the different nuances that you have to think about. But Mitchell Trubisky's got to think every single play at that same pace to make sure the decision he's making is right. If he's there thinking during the cadence, you're going to see more drop snaps. If he's there thinking during the cadence, you're going to see pressure coming at him immediately. If they see him thinking during their cadence, the defensive coordinator is going to see it and then take advantage of it. So it's about making sure that if you're going to put someone in the game, they darn better know what they're doing, every single huddle call and every subtle change the defense can make while you're going to the line of scrimmage.
And we started the quarterback conversation, and we continue it a little bit more in terms of pros and cons as what the people up at Halas Hall are going to decide whether to stick with Mike Glennon for the game a week from Monday against Minnesota or move on to Mitch Trubisky. And obviously, you know, Jim, expectations are high, especially after a handful of flash plays in the preseason that, you know, you were there for three of the four games. But especially with this thin wide receiver core, he struggles, and you have to take that into consideration as well. It's easy for fans out there to just snap their fingers and say, this team's going to be better if we throw him in. Well, in certain aspects they will be, but you have to be careful. And part of this has to be with how well you gauge the makeup of a kid, but not to be the next David Carr, not to be the next Blake Bortles, who were thrown in there, if not immediately, relatively quickly, and have been disappointments too. It's a psychological thing too, isn't it, Jim?
Yeah, it is. You know, you can crush and destroy some guy's psyche. You know, I believe everybody talks about David Carr and how hard, how he got beat down as a Houston Texans quarterback, and he was kind of never the same. You know, and I don't know if it was, you know, everybody just trashes that offensive line, but I think part of it was too is that David had to go into games and probably prepare a little bit better because he wasn't getting through his progressions, and his offensive line took a lot of the blame, and it wasn't them, you know, and so he had to prepare better. And so, and I think, and he's even talked about it, the struggles that he went through and the stigma, and it followed him everywhere else in his career. It's actually one of the reasons why the Houston Texans did not select his brother, Derek Carr, who now is what?
He's doing pretty well. Yeah.
He's doing pretty well for the Oakland Raiders. But they just thought, you know, our fans can't live through that again. And you know, you can't just because they have the same last name, you can't compare the two players. Because obviously Derek Carr, and he credits his brother, that he taught me a lot when he was going through those down moments that has helped me to prepare myself for my NFL career. So you do have to be careful about that. It matters. It's important. And you want to put a young kid out there when he's got the best chance for success, meaning the supporting cast, what's around him. Players have to play well. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, because it can't be just all on him. Because it's not just one player. It's everyone, as Tom has mentioned.
You know, one thing about Houston, when they drafted Carr, they never drafted an offensive lineman higher than the third round in the entire time he was there. They tried to do it with a bunch of makeshift offensive linemen.
Well, fourth-rounders work.
Right, I do that. But, I mean, they never gave him the top-flight left tackle. They never gave him an offensive lineman, either a center on the interior that is a future Hall of Famer. And then he was more of a passing quarterback that had a suspicious offensive line at the NFL level. I think one thing about Mitchell Trubisky is he's got a lot of creativity in his feet. And, you know, now they have a lot of plays, Jim, the run-pass option type plays that puts a little bit of paranoia in the defenses you face, because if you get an offensive or defensive lineman overzealous and they lose contain, they don't respect a quarterback's athleticism, then you're going to see a team that has a mobile quarterback starting to take advantage of that. So I do think you're going to have to kind of cultivate a little bit different of a game plan for each of them, because I do think Mike Glennon sees in between the numbers very well and throws the ball out there. I think outside the numbers is a little suspicious. So now you're going to have to figure how are you going to capitalize on Mitchell Trubisky's assets that are different than Mike Glennon's assets. And so it is going to involve a lot of coaching, and the Bears are fortunate that they have that one extra day, because if they're even considering a change, how does Mitchell Trubisky react to practice on Monday? And I think that will probably give a little bit better indicator of what they'll do when they start preparing on Thursday, since they have the Monday night game.
What, Jim, in your mind, and Tom, you're up there enough, how they were going to try and build enough enough snaps here to bring Mitch along in practices during the season, which is difficult to do. But there can't be a whole lot that he is, if he's doing anything at all, with the ones and the guys he'd be working through, or within this game plan offense when he's, you know, probably running the scout team every week, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, he's had 4 weeks of game plans where he's been given everything, what to prepare for, defense, and fine. He's out there practicing, getting the reps that he needs to increase his growth or speed along his growth. And maybe this week versus Minnesota, maybe he will get some first-team reps where you say, hey, instead of the 12 you do for team, all right, Mike, maybe you're getting 8. Mitchell, you're going to get in there for 4 now. Or maybe it goes 50-50. However they decide they want to do it, and that'll help them determine it as well. And then if they get closer to the game time and, well, you know, he didn't really practice this that well and he didn't do this that well, and maybe you got to shrink that down to the package that I meant, but also incorporate the things he does well. Because all the things that Tom said, throwing on the run, bootleg plays, the waggles, things where he moves, those are only going to work so many times. You can't do a rollout every single pass. At some point, he's going to have to throw from the pocket. He's going to have to identify a defense. He's going to have to diagnose a blitz. Because if it's all just the one thing, and I think he's savvy and can improv and do all the things Tom said, I think he's a very aware player, you know, when things are around him, what's going on. And he reacts pretty quickly. But they have to find that out. And if they feel that he's ready to do it, then they'll make the decision. But if not, it could be in the role that I mentioned of a Steve McNair type of role.
312-644-6767. Let's head out of the phone lines. And Jim from Maryville has checked in. He has a question for Tom or Jim. Jim, how you doing? Jim, are you there?
Hey, Jim.
Yeah.
Hi.
I believe that Trubisky's going to start, but here we go with all the ifs. To make him more comfortable, do you think they'll bring Gentry off the practice squad, and for because those guys have such good chemistry?
Mm-hmm. Jim, thanks for your phone call.
I like the way Jim's thinking is trying to put the quarterback into a comfort zone, because mm-hmm. you look at the work that he's had with guys like Adam Shaheen, Tariq Cohen, and Tanner Gentry that Jim mentions, that, you know, it's thinking a little bit outside the box, but as comfortable as you can make a new quarterback, I think that's what you like to see. Jim, what do you think?
Yeah, and I think, again, it's going to they're diagnosing that about their receiver position right now. Who's not running the right depth of routes? Are they making the correct blocks? Are they running to the depth of the route that it needs to be? Are they catching the football? And if Gentry, if they feel he's ready to do that and they like those qualities about him and they're going to give him an opportunity, then they will probably make that change. I do believe it, because I think that is a position that is under some serious scrutiny,
Jim,
as well.
Jim, is Kendall Wright is he the best receiver right now on the Bears, and everybody else is kind of trailing behind him? And what's your evaluation of that position at this four games point?
I think it's been a struggle, obviously, with the injuries outside to Meredith and what unfortunately happened to Kevin White again. You're down much like how Green Bay was to their 6th and 7th. You know, that's where the Bears are right now. They're not really that good at the perimeter passing game right now. And Wheaton needs to come along and have an impact. I think in terms of speed and stuff like that, Wheaton has that, but he's been inconsistent. And that's one of the reasons why the Bears elected to let him go. But Kendall Wright, to me, he's shown flashes that he can do some things. And so I think they're trying to determine that right now of where that position is, or if they need to give some other guys some opportunities like a Tanner Gentry.
Well, one thing can be certain here as we head to break is that the next game against Minnesota, you know, Mike Zimmer and that extremely talented defense and the tricks that he works up and the memory of what happened on Monday night a year ago here against the Bears.
Jordan Howard.
Yes, they're going to be that's going to be in the back of their minds. They got some business to do tomorrow first, but when they come calling at Soldier Field a week from Monday, I'm sure that'll be all in the back of their minds as well. I have another phone call at 312-644-6767. Let's take it right away. North of the border, I'm assuming a Bears fan stuck in Kenosha. Steven, how are you doing this afternoon? Thanks for checking in. Hey, Steve, you there?
Hey, Steven.
Hello?
Hey,
hello?
What's going on? You're on Bears All Access. Thanks for calling. What do you got?
I just wanted to say that, you know, Mike Lennon, he's a good quarterback and everything, but I believe that Mike Trubisky should start. And they should have Tyreek Cohen and Jordan Howard in the backfield with them for protection and for pass options.
Yeah, and they'll probably double up on tight ends a little bit as well. But they were starting to do thanks for your call, Stephen. They were starting to do a little bit of that over the last couple of weeks.
Wildcat.
Or even from the start.
Well, they had Wildcat in the Atlanta game.
Right.
And then if you go back to the second game in Tampa game, Tariq Cohen lined up at five different wide receiver positions in different groupings, different pairings out there that was at the line of scrimmage. So he does have that type of ability that you can start in the backfield with Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen. You can bring Tariq Cohen out to the sideline, and Jordan Howard can catch from the line of scrimmage also and see if you can get that matchup that you desire, that you feel that you have a winning matchup. But I'm with Steven. If you want to explore the options and the opportunity to use both those guys in the backfield, I think they could help each other a lot.
And Jim, the number of weapons on this roster right now due to injury is limited. The more weapons you have out there, I think it's a great idea to have those two out there as much as you can at the same time.
And it may be the case because, if that's what they elect to do, I don't want to call it gamesmanship or whatever, because Minnesota they don't know what the Bears are going to do. They could go in a lot of different directions, and formationally they could do certain things, because I've seen, as Tom said, Tariq Cohen lined up at the point in a bunch set. We've seen him in Wildcat. You've seen him offset in shotgun. He's lined up as a wide receiver. And all those things haven't been disclosed yet by the Bears. They have it on tape, but the consistency and what it's been utilized, it could be different. Say if Mitchell is that quarterback. So I think in terms of using it advantageously, if the Bears elect to do something like that, Minnesota right now is kind of going to be like, we don't know what the Bears are doing. They kind of got to prepare for everything. They're going to try to prepare if Mitchell gets in the game, but they really don't know how much, or is it going to be the starter? And so Mike Zimmer right now is trying to think through all those things as well.
Jim, I think would be interesting too is I really like Benny Cunningham and what he offers the Bears, both at the running back position. He caught two passes for first down against the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's good on special teams. So if you wanted a bigger, more athletic backfield, you could put Benny Cunningham and Jordan Howard in the backfield and then keep Tariq Cohen on the line of scrimmage at one of the receiver position. So I do think it's gonna challenge the creativity of Dahl Loggins, the offensive coordinator, because if you want to put the athletes on the field at the same time, I do think Benny Cunningham and Jordan Howard could visit the they could be an option in the backfield at the same time too. They both catch well, they both block well. In a couple of the best blitz pickups I've ever seen was late in the Tampa game by Jordan Howard, and he laid a lick on a linebacker and then a defensive back, and so I could use those guys at the same time also.
We talked a little bit more about the self-scouting going on at this point of the season and with a little bit of a longer week to work with. Tom, the offensive line played so well last Sunday against Pittsburgh. You saw, 216 combined rushing yards between Howard and Cohen. Thursday night, it was just 23 carries for 79 yards between the two of them. Committed five penalties as well during that. The first time that the unit was completely together as projected when they went into training camp. How are you? It's tough to evaluate because this was the first game, but how do you evaluate Thursday and now moving forward?
I think they got a lot of potential on the offensive line. I think when you play in a hostile environment like Green Bay, the crowd noise is really interruptive to how explosive the offensive line can be, because you're not hearing anything verbally. You're kind of going on timing, and that really it just doesn't give you the explosiveness that you have at home, and you saw evidence of that in the Pittsburgh game. So it's about having these guys, if they could stay on the field together for a couple games together, both at home and on the road, and become more familiar with the timing of the quarterback and when they're going to snap the ball in a nonverbal count for running plays. But to me, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, Cody Whitehair is a really good football player, and he has the ability to play anywhere up and down the line of scrimmage. But my impact offensive lineman right now is Kyle Long. If you go back and you look at the second play of the game, they had the fumble the first play. Second play of the game, they had a basic run play. And he went over and helped Cody and then went up to the second level and destroyed the linebacker, and he blew up the guy on the line of scrimmage. So you know, you look at these teams that have these great offensive linemen, and they are an impact position, and they have an impact on the running game. So, to me, if I'm going to have my most confident plays run, it's going to be Kyle Long is going to be involved one way or the other.
And offensive line was you know, viewed as an area of strength coming into this season. Another position, Jim, that was viewed as a strong area was tight end. We talked in the passing game about Kendall Wright a couple of moments ago, but Thursday night, and I realized you need some tight end help when a defense is stacking the box and you're trying to establish your running game as well. But Thursday night, Zach Miller and Deion Sims were targeted a total of 3 times. Would you imagine there could be an effort to try and get them a little bit more involved in the offense, no matter who's playing at quarterback?
Yeah, I think Zach, he had a couple big catches over the middle.
Yeah, and then the Kendall Wright touchdown.
And he made some big runs after the catch. So I definitely I like that combo of him outside the numbers and Deion Sims as the inline blocker. You know, I'm not going to leave Deion Sims off the hook. He's got to make that block on Clay Matthews, the opening play of the game. You know, I know it's Clay Matthews, but that's what Deion Sims is brought in for. He's the better inline blocker, and he has some soft hands if they use him on Y sticks and, you know, or Y shallow crosses and things like that, because he moves pretty well after he gets his hands on the ball. Shaheen, they're still working on him to get his blocking up to snuff. And I think ultimately, what was it? It was a Tennessee game. I saw him make in the preseason game, it was on both the touchdown passes by the Bears. He had the backside block in goal line. You know, so for him, when I look at Shaheen, he's to me kind of the red zone presence guy that he needs to be. Once they get in the red zone, I know we're only a couple games in where the Bears haven't been down there all that much, but, you know, in the back of the end zone type of stuff, I think that's where really Shaheen can make his mark, because that would be a huge target for any Bears quarterback to throw to. Not only he can jump because of his basketball abilities, but he's elusive down there and has the soft hands where maybe you could get some catches for a red zone presence to break Shaheen in.
You know, Jim, visiting that first play of the game against Green Bay the other night and talking about Deion Sims specifically, Clay Matthews is a really good pass rusher. He's probably a better pass rusher than Deion Sims as a blocker, because just repetitiously, you don't have the opportunity to do those things. So now you go out there the first play of the game, and Deion Sims is going to be blocking Clay Matthews Jr. with no commands from the quarterback's voice. And yep. Now he's reacting to a player that's going to kind of set the moment. And Clay Matthews is going to come at him first before Deion Sims can react to the commands of the snap count. And so I do think you put Deion Sims in a deficient position when you're going against Clay Matthews. So I do, that's why, again, if you do have that one bread and butter play that you have confidence up and down the line of scrimmage, that's when Deion Sims, I think, could have done a better job than challenging him that first play of the game against
Tom,
Clay.
You touched on it a little bit before the break here. Quentin Demps officially placed on injury reserve yesterday, so that is an 8-week injury. There was some question whether it would be. And this is not to point fingers at Adrian Amos, and you're also going up against Aaron Rodgers, but a couple serious breakdowns in the secondary on Thursday night, especially after what we had seen the first 3 weeks, was looking pretty good.
Yeah, you know what? When I think about the game the other night, Adrian Amos did a nice job against Bennett when Martellus would make some catches, and he would really limit the run after catch. He did have the one crossing route that Martellus converted. And then they had the big hit on the sideline by Eddie Jackson against Jordy Nelson that was effective. It took a possession away from him. I got to say, I had way higher expectations of the cornerbacks of the Bears, because I was thinking that probably for the first time in maybe 8 to 10 years, this is the best group of cornerbacks that we went into Green Bay with Marcus Cooper, Prince Amukamara, and Kyle Fuller. So I did think if you're going to go into a game against Green Bay Packers, a substitute offensive line, that this was going to be your chance to capitalize. Mm-hmm. And it Aaron Rodgers' greatness again outshined the coverage of the Bears, and it's not frustrating to watch. It's impressive to watch, because it's hard to ignore how capable Aaron Rodgers is.
It's just jealousy. It's flat out.
It is envy, you know, because man, this guy is special.
And Jim, it's a domino effect. We talked about the secondary, but the Bears also had 6 of their projected front 7 guys, the lone exception being Jarrell Freeman, in place, in the game, ready to fire, ready to go. And against that makeshift Green Bay offensive line, how disappointing was it to only come away with two sacks after Rodgers had been sacked 13 times the previous three games?
Yeah, I think it is disappointing. You know, and I think those guys were probably licking their chops, and then ultimately they couldn't get to Aaron Rodgers. Some of it was the fast pass ability because, as you guys mentioned, Aaron Rodgers can cover a lot of warts. He really can. He can make up for a lot of warts on a football team. But for me, whether it's the front pass rush that was lacking and then the miscommunication in the secondary, that those two things have to be cleaned up. You know, we saw it last week against Pittsburgh, as Tom mentioned about the corners. Marcus Cooper, Martavis Bryant goes right by him. I mean, that could have been a 75-yard touchdown. Hmm. Then there's miscommunication in this game, leaving Jordy Nelson wide open on the corner route. And even on the one fast pass where Jordy Nelson goes to the flat, he was in the slot and he runs right to the flat, the front corner of the pylon, and it's an easy open pass. And Kyle Fuller at that point, he's looking in at the nickelback. Nickelback's looking at him, and it looked like they were going to trade off, and then they ultimately don't do it. It really could have been a pick six or a blow-up shot, and you could see them bickering like, I screwed up, you know? So they've got to get it cleaned up in terms of the communication, and they got to trust one another.
If
everybody's on the same page, they'll be fine, but it's like nobody's on the same page.
That first drive that Green Bay ran the ball so well against the Bears had to give him a little bit of confidence also, knowing that the run game is still going to be enough of an impact where I can be Aaron Rodgers. I think if the Bears would have completely derailed any attempt they had at being successful with the running game, that's where you put more pressure on Aaron Rodgers, and that's where you get a little bit more out of your pass rush.
Agreed. And you're right. They couldn't make the stop that was necessary, and they ran it effectively just enough. And I think, again, it was all game plan by Mike McCarthy. Let's get these young tackles to settle down and this offensive line to settle down, and they did it with some of the most basic formations and basic runs that you could do.
Well, we have to, that was the Bears and Green Bay were the first head-to-head NFC North matchup of the weekend. The other one comes tomorrow as we take a look at a matchup or two, and primarily in terms of local interest here, the Detroit Lions, after that so close loss to the Atlanta Falcons at home last week, to fall to 2-1. They go up to Minnesota tomorrow to take on the Vikings. That game for the Vikes before they head here a week from Monday to take on the Bears. It looks, well, Case Keenum will remain the starting quarterback for the Vikings. The Lions beat Minnesota twice last year, including that heartbreaker up in Minneapolis, the late touchdown and then the overtime winner by Matthew Stafford. Jim, you get a sense of how things are going in the Lions area. What are you looking for in this game?
Well, as you mentioned, I mean, these bad calls continue to happen against the Lions. It's like, you know, everybody around here makes them sick because I live here in Motown. But like their secondary, their defense is playing much better. They've been opportunistic in terms of the turnovers. They got three interceptions last week on Matt Ryan. So I think, you know, I think their pass rush is okay. I think when you look at Ziggy Ansah, he's finally healthy, and their defense is formidable. But offensively, I still think they've got struggles running the football. And I think an area that the Bears exploited last year was the D-line of Minnesota, and I don't know if the Detroit Lions can do that. And they're still, their left tackle's pretty shaky when you look at Robinson, who they traded with the Rams. He's not a bright spot in their offense. So I like Minnesota.
Tom, real quick, what's your...
Well, I mean, you think of Green Bay Bears outdoor football, you think of Minnesota-Detroit indoor football. I think the crowd noise will be enough of a factor of the away team where it'll change some... just some success that they'll have on offense.
So both Tom and Jim going with the Minnesota Vikings before they head here to take on the Bears a week from Monday at Soldier Field. That's a wrap for this edition of Bears All Access, brought to you by IGS Energy. Jim, Tom, enjoy the rest of the weekend, and thanks for jumping on. We hope all of you do as well. I'm Chris Bowden, filling in for Zach Zabin. The next edition of Bears All Access comes your way at 6 o'clock Wednesday with Zach and Tom and a bear coming your way from Hallis Hall. That's a wrap. Thanks for listening to Bears All Access, everyone. Enjoy the rest of your Saturday.